Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, hello there and welcome to WTA Weekly. And I am very pleased to be joined by Mr. San Diego himself, Vansh Vamani. How are you doing?
Doing great, Nick. It's no secret this is one of my favorite weeks all year. And yeah, it definitely delivered.
How do you feel about it being March rather than September?
Mixed feelings. I like it being kind of like a road to Indian Wells, Miami. I think narratively that fits well in terms of the calendar, in terms of the location, in terms of the players anyway coming there and doing training blocks a lot of the time. I think this year, though, the field in terms of maybe, I guess you could say, big names or star quality names that, maybe bring crowds and sell tickets. There weren't quite a lot of those this year, unfortunately. And I think that had to do with the 1,000 scheduled back-to-back in Dubai and Doha, and it just makes it really hard for a player like players like Sabalenka, Rybakina, Iga, players at the very, very top to make that trip and come to San Diego. But still, I think we had great crowds by the end, at least like from Thursday onwards, and they were able to get more tickets sold and stuff. But yeah, weather-wise, it was very surprising because normally we don't usually have this kind of weather in San Diego, you know? I think a lot of the players were taken aback by how much it was raining, how cold it was, especially chilly at night. Most of the players aren't used to be playing in, 14, 13 degrees Celsius. So it's that was definitely an adjustment for all of them. And normally we get some rain in February, but not this much.
How good a prep do you think it's going to have been for Indian Wells?
I think it's good in terms of just getting some match reps in and getting your feet wet before you start. But I think the conditions are so different. They're going to get used. They're going to be playing with different balls next week. The ball is going to travel so much faster through the air. It's going to be a grittier surface. It's going to be slower. So there's a lot of adjustments that they're going to have to make in the desert. But in terms of getting used to the weather and the setup, maybe it's not such a bad thing.
Well, we know that you'll be, you are the man to talk to about all things San Diego, not only because you seem to go every time the tournament was held, but you were on the ground covering everything for Tennis One app. and got some really good content out of it. Jealous it's not for us, but anyway.
I wish, yeah.
but anyway, so someone who probably wouldn't mind, won't care so much that San Diego doesn't necessarily feed well into Indian Wells in terms of conditions, because she was the star of the week. Katie Bolser is a WTA 500 champion. And I'm going to be honest, I am a little bit surprised. I did not have her achieving this level of title in her career. I saw her getting some 250s in, making second week of a slam. You know, she's a good player and very exciting to watch. And, you know, I've loved seeing her heroics at Wimbledon over the years, really competing on the grass. Did you think she had this potential?
No, to be honest, I really didn't. I was just like you as well. I didn't, you know, I always thought she had a lot of potential. You know, when you see the ball striking, it really kind of jumps out at you. You know, obviously on grass, I always expect her to be a bit of a threat. I think she won Nottingham last year. So that was her first WTA title. And then I think, you know, there were some signs that she was playing some good tennis. Like she beat Pagula at the United Cup, was down like a set in two breaks. And then, you know, like made the third round of the US Open. So it was kind of building, but I didn't think she would go on and win the title, you know, and not in these conditions. And I never thought, watching her courtside, I never always associated her as a great mover. But I was watching her this week, the way she was defending in the corners and just, you know, how much better of a athlete she is, like, than I'd maybe given her credit for, or I hadn't quite realized. Maybe it's just a huge jump that she's made physically also the last five or six months in terms of like working on that in the off season. But yeah, like she was really impressive this whole week. Like, I generally don't think it's a fluke. I think it's like something that she can actually build on.
Yeah, because physicality and injuries held her back for so much of her career up to this point, up until last year, really, when she came out and she won Nottingham and got herself on the top 100 and then suddenly climbed into the top 50, and now she's top 30. So you're saying that in terms of this week, you know, we've seen physical improvements, her defense, which is not necessarily something we talk about. We always talk about her weaponry, her attacking mindset, and sort of style. Definitely much more aggressive, and that's why she's been able to take it to some big players. Is that what she did right?
Yes. I also thought that every time she had a forehand in the middle of the court, she was absolutely deadly with it. And it was like just point-ending aggression. And she served really, really well throughout the whole week. I was very surprised that she basically only lost 3 points on her first serve against Navarro, someone who, you know, generally gets a lot of balls back and is pretty comfortable in those like baseline rallies. And like she never even stood a chance in that entire semifinal because Katie just totally overpowered her. And, you know, like the forehand, I think, has gotten better. The serve, I think, is more accurate. And then also like the defense in the corners and just, the way she's like scrambling and defending and just so hard to hit through. And that's like just such a deadly combination. She still probably could work a little bit on her second serve. That's probably maybe the one area she does tend to double fault, throw in a lot of double faults, especially even in the final, which can make it a little bit more complicated for her. But that's, that's neither here nor there. When everything else in her game is clicking, she's going to be a force.
That final was a bit of a double fault fest, wasn't it, though, from both?
It was, yeah. It was. I think she hit 13 in the whole match. Luckily, they didn't usually happen in super key moments, and she only faced one break point in the second and third set, so it was kind of very misleading. But I still think, like she doesn't really have a great kick serve right now. She mostly does slices it or, you know, goes sometimes body, but like she definitely takes a good amount of risk on it. So maybe she could like that risk reward profile would be a little better if she improved her kick serve. But yeah.
It always comes down to the serve, doesn't it? We say, well, what can they improve? Probably the serve. It's either the first or the second.
I think the first serve is very good, but the second serve is the one usually that's, yeah.
I meant for like players in general. We're talking about what they can fix. The first thing anyone
says. And we say that about a lot of young players, don't we? When you know when they first come up, it's like they do all this well, but they could get more out of their serve. You know, that's usually like, and usually that's a good thing because it's like, okay, if everything else in your game is developed, like the serve is the one thing you can actually theoretically like improve, and do. But you know, and sometimes we see it, and sometimes you know, maybe it just gets to a point where it plateaus, and you know, it's not always going to be a big strength. But yeah,
I mean, you know, because this is a player who, like, I think Bolt has been slowly gaining fans recently. You know, in the last sort of year or so, obviously British fans familiar with her. I think she became more familiar to more British people when she won Nottingham, and she did okay at Wimbledon, got to the third round last year. No, we saw her name a little bit more often, but she started to make herself a name a little bit more internationally. And I think this week is the week a lot of fans discovered her and really seemed to welcome her game style. I mean, what is it that you think makes her so good? What is it that makes her a top 30 player? What is it that do you think is so attractive about her game, and the two might be linked?
Yeah, the power just immediately jumps at you when you watch her court side. Like, she has this like thump sound every time she hits the ball, especially off the forehand. And she can hit, you know, she's comfortable changing directions pretty well. Like, just the ball striking right away just sort of jumps out. And then also just yeah, the level of intensity and focus that she brought throughout the whole week. She was able to like just sustain that aggression in most of her matches all the way through, and there wasn't really like that huge lull or dip, you know, in most of these matches, apart from maybe the final, which we'll get to later, where she was, you know, certainly tested in that first set, and that could have been really tough because she came back in that first set and then ended up losing it. But the way she was just totally able to just reset and just kind of play on her terms, and every single opponent that she beat this week was ranked higher than her, so that's certainly a huge jump. I think her game style is pretty fun to watch just because she takes the ball early, she hits the ball really big, and wasn't missing a ton this week. So that just makes it really hard. I think I compared her on Twitter to like a peak Paula Badosa, like when she won Indian Wells. It was just like, you know, anything short, anything like central, like shoulder height, it was just being crushed. And yeah, it didn't really matter the person that she was playing, it just sort of never really changed. She kept that fearless abandon like all the way through.
That's a comparison you want to have. She's like this former Indian Wells champion as we arrive at Indian Wells. yeah, I mean, let's talk about the finals. Obviously, we've talked a little bit about like what's made her so good. How did she win this tournament? What was your read on that final between her and Marta Kostyuk?
Yeah, I to be honest, like going in, I really had no idea who was going to win. I think I gave a slight edge to Boulder, but I was very like not sure about it because Kostyuk, obviously, like we've known about her for a while, like the potential that she has. She's only 21, which is just crazy because she's been around for like 6 years. But obviously, like we know she's extremely talented and temperamental, but when she puts it together, she's like such a complete package because her defense is absolutely elite. And the way she covers the court, the way she can slide into her backhand, also just really the creativity that she has, like the variety that she's able to bring as well with like finishing at the net, the drop shots, the kind of higher loopier balls that she just gets a bit more shape on and gets it out of her opponent's strike zone. So that was really trouble for Katie in the first set because she was just Kostyuk was basically just a wall and getting everything back, and Katie's serve was being neutralized, and then she was having to go for more on the second serve, and that's where you saw a lot of those double faults. So I thought she did really well to get back to 5-all from 5-2, but afterwards I just thought Kostyuk played really well for like 3 or 4 games, and Boulter just had to wait that out a little bit. And once she was in a winning position in the second and third set, she never really looked back, and that was the most impressive part about the performance for me, because I actually thought that third set would be a lot tougher for her to close out, but she just kept getting better and better as the match went on. And even that last service game, she hit 2 aces and another forehand inside out winner on match point. So, yeah.
And actually, that's one thing we're going to say about Bolter is her mentality has actually always been pretty strong. She's always fought to stay in matches when she's been down. And so it doesn't surprise me that she is able to control sets and matches when she's up, if she's playing well enough. I mean, sometimes her big style does let her down, can overhit, and that might stop her from necessarily running away from a set. But she was playing really, really well in that final where obviously that didn't happen. She edged out. So yeah, I'd agree with that assessment there. And I think that played a key factor there. Last thing I want to ask about Bolter, are you excited to see how she matches up with the top 10, maybe even the top 4?
Yeah, I am. I'm pretty excited. I mean, she hasn't really, you know, I remember she played Sabalenka in the first round of maybe Beijing, and that was a match that she mentioned to me in the press conference that really told her that actually level-wise she's pretty close. It's just a matter of bringing that level consistently week in and week out. And that's the biggest takeaway for her, because she said, I can beat anyone, but I can also lose to anyone. And right now I want that gulf to be less. And I don't want this to be the biggest title of my career. And I want to take this into the bigger tournaments, and I want to keep improving my ranking. So I'm not having to draw a Sabalenka in the first round of a 1,000. And she made the choice actually to not play any of the 1,000s in Doha and Dubai, which is a bit of a gamble considering how many points are at offer. But she just said, you know, I'm going to go back, train in the UK, and just reset my body, and then just try to do well in the swing. And it worked for her. I don't think she thought she was going to win the title, but now this really like just unlocks a whole lot of potential for her, because even though she didn't beat, you know, someone of that top 4, top 5 caliber this week, you know, the run that she had was really quite something. She was the underdog in like 3 of those matches, and she pretty much came through them, you know, some of them with relative ease, like the semifinal. And so yeah, this hopefully is a start to more big wins and maybe a top 5 win or something. We'll see. She already has one over Pagula, but yeah, I mean, but yeah, like a matchup against Goff where so many more balls are going to come back, and she's going to, you know, maybe be forced to not overhead, or against Sabalenka where she might just be on the back foot, and Rybakina, same thing. So yeah, I'm curious. I'm also curious to see how it holds up on slower courts and clay courts as well. That's also the big question mark. But
And of course, how she's up against Iga.
Yeah, that as well. That's like the ultimate test, but yeah.
Mm. I think she could definitely compete, like obviously as mentioned, top 4, but you know, she's definitely, you know, and Pagula as well, which, you know, suggests that she should be able to cope pretty well with the likes of Sakkari, Vondrousova, Jabeur, who else in the top 10, Ostapenko, depends on the day Ostapenko's having.
Depends on the day.
Yeah, it really does. I guess one last quick thing, good question has been asked. Is it too late for it to be seeded for Indian Wells, or is it this week's rankings that decide the seedings?
It would be this week's ranking. So I think she's up to a 27. So yeah, she would be seeded. Yeah. So that's good. No one would want to face her in the early rounds.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about her opponent in the final, because you made a point earlier. And that's Marta Kostyuk. And you made a comment earlier about sort of, you know, it was difficult to call who was going to win that match. And I was in a similar position to you, where it was, you were favouring Bolter just, but you were aware of Kostyuk's potential. And I was actually going the other way for similar reasons. I went with Kostyuk just because of the potential she's shown, the years she's had so far, finally making Grand Slam quarterfinal. Obviously, we've known about her potential since she made the third round of Australia as a 15-year-old, yeah, pre-COVID. Kostyuk, huge potential, big hitter. What's holding her back?
Well, I think a lot of it was just clarity and big moments, I feel like, because she always had like this nice array of shots. You always looked at her and you're like, that's a good tennis player. You know, that's somebody who's solid off of both wings. That's someone who can really move and cover the court like a gazelle. That's someone who has potential for the serve to be even better. And there were like all these things that she just needed to figure out how to, I believe, like just package into more, you know, consistent plays, reliable plays that she can go to when she's feeling the pressure. And I just feel like she did a better job of this week of just putting all the pieces together, because she does have a lot of options. Like, you do watch her play, you're like, okay, she's comfortable like 5 feet behind the baseline. She can come in. She's comfortable drop shotting. She's got a lot of variety that actually a lot of players don't quite have on the WTA, at, you know, within her ranking range. So I think that that always means like there's a tremendous amount of potential, but also she plays with a lot of fire, a lot of passion. She's extremely, I guess, temperamental at times. And when it does, and sometimes it actually helps her. I asked her about this in the press conference. Can it sometimes help you or hurt you? And she said it's different, that in some cases it really helps her, because she's able to just release that anger and just move on, and maybe just, yeah, it helps her have that intensity and that purpose when she's playing. But other times it can bleed over and to the next games, and you see her body language just kind of slump and for points in a row, and then that's when it really hurts her, because all of a sudden now she's lost 4 or 5 games where she just had this massive dip and this lack of clarity because her mind is clouded. And so I just think now she's a little bit better about that. She mentioned her female coach, Sandra, which someone that she really feels like she can connect to on a personal level, emotional level. And Sandra doesn't really discourage her from, you know, throwing those temper tantrums every once in a while, because she also knows that it can help her. So I think that ever since Wimbledon is when she had her first top 10 win. Like, she had lost her last 14 against top 10 players before that. She made the point, though, in the press that it's not so much about the ranking, because a lot of times, you know, sometimes you'll have a top 5 player who's playing like number 92, and then other times you'll have you'll play someone like a Pavlyuchenkova who is not top 10 but is playing amazing tennis. So I thought that was a good point, but also she's unlocked something there where I'd be very curious to see now what she's like if she was to play Coco again, having had this run in San Diego. You know, maybe she'll handle that moment better than she did at the Australian Open.
She's definitely made some good progress this year. Clearly, this new coach has impacted her really positively. It's really great to see more female coaches on tour and having success. Yeah.
For Bolter as well, she also has a female coach, although it's shared with Damian Rodriguez. But she also said the same thing, where she really feels like having a female voice who just sort of understands the pressure of, yeah, what she's going through week in and week out is something she can relate to.
Yeah, Anastasia said on the Grounds Pass podcast that we do that she really hopes Kim Clijsters will be a coach one day, but that's another story. But like, going back to Kostyuk, yes, I think this not winning this title is a big missed opportunity for her. But you're right, she could take a lot of positives from this week and even from the year so far. You know, she pushed Goff in that quarterfinal in Australia. She's got to the final here. That Pegula win is going to give her a little bit of confidence.
Yeah. Yeah, that Pegula win was definitely something, because she was able to sustain that aggression. Yes, Pegula did help her out a lot. I don't think by any means Pegula played her best tennis throughout the whole week. She would be the first to admit it. But, you know, from 1-5 down, she reeled off 12 of the next 14 games and, yeah, really made Pegula implode at times. So that was quite impressive. And Pegula, like, really lauded Marta for the consistent depth and aggression that she brought, like, throughout the whole match, and just how she always known that Marta had a tremendous amount of potential, but now she's, like, really starting to put it together. So, yeah, we'll see. That was definitely a big win.
Yeah, absolutely. For her as well, so I'm curious to see that. And you know, speaking of that win, because I've seen a little bit of chatter already about it, especially on our viewers here. So Joanna Saar has mentioned Pegula. My question is, are we ringing alarm bells for her season yet?
Not quite. I think there's a few things that can be explained here. I just think, in January, we saw she was not at her best in Australia. She had that gastroenteritis thing that, you know, I think definitely affected her performance in the second round there. Then she is no longer working with her coach, David Witt. So they had that, and she was dealing with a bit of a neck issue. So she used this 1 month to work on a lot of things in her game. One, just get a new coaching setup going in with Mark McCrine and Mark Knowles, who will be with her at Indian Wells, but isn't here right now. And they're working on improving her serve, because she is focused on making that a bigger weapon. She thinks that any sort of small gains that she can have on the surf, even if it's 5 to 10%, she doesn't want to end her career with that regret, which I think is a great move because that is the one area of her game that I feel like was holding her back from reaching the very highest potential, particularly that Grand Slam quarterfinal hurdle, which I think she definitely mentioned is definitely a factor in this change as well. It's not like the only factor, but it is definitely a big factor still. And so getting used to that new coaching setup, the service motion, she wasn't very happy with her serve the whole week. But she feels like if she takes a step back, it might not be such a bad thing. And maybe in the long run, maybe 2 or 3 months from now, it might pay off somewhere. And maybe she takes 2 steps forward. But there's that as well. And then I also think, yeah, she just never really felt the ball great this week. I don't think the conditions she enjoyed very much, the cold, slow conditions where, her flat shots weren't doing as much damage penetrating through the court, especially when it was raining like crazy. And I think she was using this week really as, I think for her first tournament back, it's actually not so bad to get to the semis, get through a couple of matches without playing her best. It did kind of spiral out of control for her in that Kostyuk match, particularly that second set, which was not competitive at all. But, she got in some singles and doubles, and I think she's going to go into Indian Wells feeling pretty fresh. So I don't think it's the best court for her. I'm more sort of looking at Miami. I think the conditions in Indian Wells are going to be a bit tougher. It's one of the only tournaments that she hasn't made a quarterfinal in. But I think she had a pretty good perspective on it afterwards. She was obviously quite disappointed with her level, but yeah, I think there are some minor positive things to take away, I think.
We know Pegula likes to peak at Miami for multiple reasons, but her results there kind of show it. You know, I think it wouldn't shock me to see her in the Miami final. If she has a good enough week, she could totally do it. So I guess we have to see how this new coaching relationship works out. Very quick tangent, David Witt working with Sakkari. Thoughts?
Yeah, that was kind of surprising, but not that surprising actually, if you think about it, because I think some people were calling it on Twitter. I don't remember who said that, but yeah, maybe that's a good move, because Witt is someone who tends to stay with his clients for a lot longer. Like, he was with Venus for like 11 years and with Pegula for like 5. And for Sakkari, I really felt like she needed a big change. Like, she was just stagnating and the results haven't quite been there. I know she won Guadalajara, but it just feels like in her game, she hasn't quite reached that next gear that, you know, she thought she would have by now. So for her, it should be a good move, especially because Pegula and Sakkari played against each other a ton, you know. And that's one of the rivalries that always goes back and forth. So they know each other's games really well. And I think maybe he can bring some into what he brought to Jesse, to Sakkari. And, you know, maybe that will make Sakkari just more stable week in and week out. I think it could be good. What do you think?
I think it's promising. Obviously, yeah, Witt has got a great track record. Maybe he provides that sort of stability, but also that ability to kind of see where progress could be made in Sakkari's game. Sakkari's a very, very good player, a lot of potential, and maybe this is where she starts to realise her potential a little bit more frequently. Obviously, we saw what she could do in 2021, because, you know, contrary to a lot of people, I don't think her problem is mental, really. I think it is matchups, and her game is very, very good against most players, but when she's having a good week, it's not enough to beat the very best right now. And maybe David Witt can unlock something there. So, yeah, that would be my take on it.
I think sometimes people definitely oversimplify that it's just mental and nerves. But I do think there actually are like a few technical things as well that she could get a bit better at, and also just kind of... there's times where I see her just kind of try the same thing over and over again, and she doesn't really make those mid-match adjustments.
Exactly.
Particularly in some of those early Grand Slam losses. And then also just, there's times where I feel like her patterns are a bit too predictable, or she's, yeah, just not really willing to, you know, try something a little bit different when she has chances with how big she hits the ball. I think she could get even more out of her serve. I think the backhand at times can also hold her back as well. Doesn't really defend as well off that corner as she does off the forehand. There's like just a few things that I feel like percentage wise, she could get a little bit better at, and then that could be the difference between her. Maybe getting back to that 2021 level or closer to it.
Well, we could hope, because that makes things that would, more players having good time. Is always good for the tour. Having more competition is always good. I think it's time we move on from San Diego. I know you don't want to, Vance. I know you always want to stay in San Diego, but the tour moves on and so must we. So we will move on to the other tournament that was happening, the 250 in Austin, which wasn't a lot of headlines from it. I think it definitely got buried in amongst another WTA 500 and two ATP 500s going on. But the tournament was won by Wan Wei. I believe that's how you pronounce the name.
I think that's right.
Wan Wei, who has been getting a couple of interesting results recently. I don't know if you've ever seen much of her game, but is she a player with potential?
I think she can be top 50, and I definitely see her, getting to third, fourth rounds of majors if the draw breaks right or something. I think I saw her play at the US Open, I want to say last year. Maybe she won three matches or something there, and she got to she took a set off of Pegula, I remember that. She's definitely a player who takes the ball early. She doesn't have the biggest weapons that like kind of really jump out at you, but she's fairly consistent. Keeps a good tempo in her rally shots. She's good at like changing directions on her ground strokes, and kind of the thing that you associate some Chinese players with, like Lina, like just being able to take the ball early and just drive it through the court nicely, and just just set up some easy opportunities to win points. And I think she can also grind and defend quite well, especially at that level where she was, at the ATX Open against Gio. I watched a little bit of that because it was happening in the media room, and it was like Gio with her forehand wasn't having a ton of success against Yuan's backhand because she was just able to absorb all the pace and just change directions with it pretty nicely. So I think she can be a top 50 player. I don't really see her as being like a contender to win a 500 or a 1000 at this point, but I didn't think that about Katie Bolter, and then she made a huge leap. So yeah, it could happen. I think she's young enough where, maybe there are some games to be made. She's only 25, I think. So I think, maybe. And Chinese tennis is definitely on the rise, both on the men's and the women's tour. So she has a lot of people to look up to in terms of,
They definitely have a great depth of talent. There's no doubt about that. You're right, she's 25. Great depth of talent. In terms of the Chinese players, but obviously their big hope for sort of the player with the highest ceiling is currently Song Jinwen. Mm-hmm. The only other real story from Austin, I would say, was Anastasia Sevastova, who continuing her comeback, beating Sloane Stephens, getting to the semi-finals, and then leaving the court in a wheelchair, right? Or at least I saw photos of it, I didn't see the match.
I didn't see the match, unfortunately, but I heard about that.
I mean, I don't know, I haven't heard too much more about it, but it looks like an injury concern already in what was looking to be quite a promising comeback.
Well, that was kind of a shame because she played really well against Stephens, and she always had such a tricky game. I think she played Stephens in the US Open quarterfinals and beat her in 2018. So I remember just seeing her always as like such a tricky opponent who like, it's one of those players who throws a lot of junk shots, who has a ton of variety, these like nasty slices that dip so low, and she's also just she was quite consistent in that 2017 to 2019 stretch for some time there. So, and actually didn't even realize that she was active because she'd been out for so long. So,
I thought she retired.
Yeah, I thought it was one of those like Kuznetsova or something where you just don't know and then like you find out later. But
I mean, Kuznetsova hasn't officially retired. It's only Wikipedia that's retired her.
Yeah, Wikipedia retired her, which I still don't get it. I don't know if, because like I think you have to like take out your, you have to be like off the rankings, right, for it to be, or like request to be taken off the rankings if you announce. Some players just don't announce it and they just wait a long enough period that they just
She's not played in like 3 years, Kuznetsova.
I think since 2021 Wimbledon, that was her last match that hasn't played since.
Which is a shame, given she's a two-time slam champ. You would have thought there'd be a bit more fanfare.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what she likes, what she wants.
I guess so. Especially because she was a pretty big name in the early 2000s, or late 2000s as well. Winning Roland Garros in 2009.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I remember watching that match, because I remember there was a lot of fuss about Dinara Safina, and was she finally going to win a slam after being world number one? It just didn't materialize. But we don't need to dwell on the past, because we must now move on to the future. The future starts in 2 days, which is Indian Wells. Starts on Wednesday. I think the women's draw starts the day before the men's, if I'm right. That's the way they usually do it.
Yep.
I say the women's draw starts. We don't have it yet. I think it's coming out within a couple of hours of this being broadcast.
It should be coming out at, I think it's happening at 3 p.m. local time, and it's 2:20 right now. So,
oh gosh, it's down for 40 minutes trying to fill it and turn it into an Indian Wells draw preview. Or we'll come back in 40 minutes.
Yeah, but have you gotten a chance to look at the qualifying results? I just saw the results from yesterday. That's another thing. I just don't know how to watch the qualifying. I wanted to watch some of it today, but there's no streams or anything available. So,
yeah, similar problem for me with the qualifying. Because the time zone is a little bit tricky. We can have a look at sort of the main headlines. I think we've got some going on right now. Three results already from qualifying today. Ponche's knocked out Zarazua, Montgomery's knocked out Bazrasels, and it's gone. Never mind. Google decided I didn't need to see the Indian Wells qualifying results.
The main one that I saw was that Shea Suwei won a match in three sets against Rakimova, and I thought she had retired from singles.
What's she doing?
Yeah, I thought we literally saw her play her last match in Australia in the qualies, and then
has she changed her mind?
Maybe that was just at the slams. I don't know. Suwei just sort of does what Suwei wants, and the world is better.
Suwei does what she wants.
Yeah, and the world is better for it.
Yeah. So we've got through from round one, Montgomery's through. Bernarda Parra beat Christina McNeil, who's a promising 17-year-old. Yeah, Shea Suwei.
Dean said she has retired from slam tennis. Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Okay, yeah. So maybe she's still going to be playing tour events. That's good.
Got now Hibino. We're only partway through this draw at the minute, and it's only partway around the first round of qualies. Irani's won, Rodionova's won, Towson won her opener, Linda Fravitova's through, Heather Watson's out by the look of it. Waiting to see what happens with Lara Siegmund, friend of the show, was lost, seventh seed to Hontama. Vic Meyer's out as well. So we've already lost a few seeds. Taylor Townsend's in qualifying. Hopefully she comes through that. That seems to be what we're having with qualifying. So, yeah, names to keep an eye out on, but not necessarily names you're expecting to break the draw necessarily. Maybe someone like a Towson or an Osorio or a Townsend if they catch fire.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know if there's really anyone else in qualities that I was circling that on these courts could do some really big damage.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's talk about big damage. So what storylines are you excited for in Indian Wells for the WTA?
I guess it was focus on the top four. I mean, Rybakina, can she defend? You know, that's going to be the big question. Of course, last year she was just so good in the semis and finals. And even in the quarter, she beat Mokova, and she's just, you know, riding that wave in the Sunshine double. So is she going to be fully healthy? Is she going to, like, I've noticed sometimes health can be a question mark with her, little niggles here or there and a virus or something like that, that can sometimes, you know, come in the way of her completing tournaments fully healthy. So we'll see if that happens at this time. Hopefully she'll be healthy. And then Sabalenka as well. Sabalenka, after the Dubai loss to Vekic, how she sort of responds here, and, you know, conditions that should suit her. She got to the final last year. And for Iga as well, yeah. Same thing. Conditions that suit her pretty well. So, yeah, it's basically going to be about those three and Goff. Goff too. Goff, yeah, a little bit of a step back maybe in Doha. And then in Dubai, she got to the quarters. So, yeah, I'm kind of just focused on those four right now. And then we'll see if any other big names emerge throughout the week. But are there like any dark horses maybe?
Even any circle? Some breakout names, yeah, we could see. Yeah, I think in terms of dark horses, it's difficult to say, because I think with the WTA, there's so many options for a dark horse, right?
Yeah.
Azarenka could go well here. Karolina Pliskova is playing well at the minute. Ostapenko is the ultimate dark horse. There's almost too many to name, really. But you're right, it's going to be about the top four. I think you'd be crazy to put anyone other than the top four as the favorite. Sorry, fans.
For Americans, I'm trying to see who else has that sort of heavy topspin forehand or something like that that could hit through these really slow conditions like they would on a clay court.
Keys is probably really frustrated. She can't. Keys isn't playing, is she? I think she's still injured, right?
No. She's not. She's still hurt. So I don't think she's playing. But, you know, someone like a Haddad Maia, I'm curious if she could do some damage here. Yeah. Although she's just coming off of four losses in a row, and a really tough loss to Kazakina in the Abu Dhabi semifinal. Still one of the best matches all year. But
Kazakina, quarterfinalist. Someone who could go around here. Osaka, former champion, built a bit of
Osaka is going to be a big story as well. Indian Wells in Miami for sure are going to be pretty big for her. Because she got a few more matches and started to look a lot better in Dubai getting to the quarters, although she did have a walkover. But I feel like the main ingredients in her game are still there. You know, it's just about winning the big points, which she didn't do against Pliskova, and in matches like Pliskova and Garcia. And maybe these tournaments are going to be good because she won't draw those names so early.
Yeah, it gets some wins under her belt. By the way, apparently Keys is back.
Oh. Is she playing Indian Wells though? Oh, she is. Okay, yeah. Cool. She just announced this today. Nice.
Fantastic. Okay, so that's the last few hours. So that's good. Keys in the draw is always fun, I think. She's I think a lot better player than people give her credit for, and she's there to be a disruptor.
Yeah. There's a lot of others. Danielle Collins is another one who is just sort of was playing very liberated and free ever since she announced that this is her last year. But I did see that she got injured in Austin. I'm not sure what happened there. So
hopefully she she recovers well enough to be able to play in Indian Wells. Another name, of course, that's generating a lot of buzz in Indian Wells is Venus Williams, who is given a wild card. So she's kicking off her 2024 season here, and is already drawing crowds.
Yeah, that's why they give these wild cards. You know, it's not about. It's not really about taking names from other players. Like you see a lot of that online. People are just like, oh, you know, they're taking a spot from someone else. But it really is just about it's about selling tickets. It's about getting people interested.
Yeah. You know? Wild cards for me are for people who have, have some kind of, it's about putting someone in the draw who's going to sell tickets, who's going to give a good match. And could be a big enough name to plausibly win it. Okay, maybe Venus probably isn't winning Indian Wells, but we said that about Gorani Vinicevic at Wimbledon in 2001. probably not the best comparison, but just putting it out there. But yeah, I think Venus will obviously draw a crowd. I'm interested to see how her draw goes. If she draws the right player, we could see her winning a match.
Yeah, could happen, but I'd probably say, probably lean towards not, but you know, it's possible. She did win a match in Cincinnati that I really wasn't expecting her to win against Kurumitova. And she had those couple of really good matches against Georgie and Ostapenko on grass.
In Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, as long as we still get to see her at some capacity, it can only be a good thing. So,
well, let's circle back to the top four. And we got our poll up. If you haven't voted in it yet, tell us
what. Oh, Jasmine Paolini was another name I had in mind. Who? Yeah.
Yes.
Like maybe these courts can be good for her as well.
Yeah, maybe. It's going to be interesting to see if she can carry on this momentum from Dubai. I think Paolini's quite a streaky player. Might be a risk. Oh, you know who else is fire in Indian Wells? Leila Fernandez.
Yeah, I was thinking about her as well. She just picked up an injury. I was watching her play Tatiana Maria this week in San Diego.
Oh, no. One of the best matches. She retired, didn't she? She won the first set and had to retire.
She won the first set, and in the tiebreak, she hurt her shoulder while running for a ball, and then, yeah, retired for the first time in her career in the second set, which, yeah, hopefully she'll be healthy by then.
Kalinskaya is being suggested by PRS. I think, given her year, she's got a lot of potential. My one question would be, how does she bounce back from what would have been a very difficult loss in Dubai in that final? Because she served for it. So it's going to be all on her and how she deals with that. If she deals with it well, she's a threat.
She had an unbelievable tournament, but then in the last four games, it really just, it fell apart a little bit.
Can't believe, yeah, four games and your whole week comes apart. That's tennis. Oh,
the last four games were the worst he played all week. But yeah, I mean.
Top four.
Yeah, of course, there's obviously like those Americans like Peyton Stearns, Caroline Dolheid. They hit kind of a heavier ball on the forehand. Maybe they could make some noise there. You're not really looking at them to win, but, you know, could cause an upset or two.
Yes, Jana, the draw is happening in 30 minutes in Indian Wells, and we'll be paying attention to all these names coming out the hat. Joanna is obviously commentating for podcast listeners or people watching back. Joanna in the live chat is asking when the draw is happening. Obviously we've got our two finalists currently being shown on the screen of the YouTube show. Let's talk about this. Who do you think is the favorite for the Indian Wells title?
I mean, just like percentage chance. I always tell, I'm going to be picking Iga until after the French Open is over.
Look, she's, I worked this out. It dawned on me that she's probably the favorite for at least 2/3 of WTA 1000 titles.
Basically any big event from now until Roland Garros except Madrid, I'm making her the favorite.
Yeah, she's the clear favorite, or like she's the definite percentage except favorite at every single one, but she's not the definitive percentage favorite at three out of the four slams.
Yes, correct. Which like, is that's pretty clear. Much how it is right now. John in Madrid, like Madrid, I'll go with Sabalenka, but like the other tournaments, yeah. Like Iga's a proven quantity. She's done it and won all of them. And like, yeah, if she's like playing her best and she doesn't hit a wall like she did in that semifinal in Dubai, you know, it's in very specific conditions too, by the way. So yeah, I mean, you have to make her the favorite because she's probably like the most likely to, you know, not get upset early, I would think, because it's just a very specific style of tennis required to beat her, and specific conditions make it easier to keep that level up consistently enough to ask those questions.
Absolutely. It's all about the level Iga brings in, especially since, well, obviously she's won Indian Wells before, but she absolutely loves these conditions, and I don't think it was the only reason she lost last year, but a big reason why she lost last year was the rib injury that she'd been playing through until the semifinals. She's got to be clearly a big factor in Indian Wells. And yeah, I would agree with you. Percentage favorite, like head choice for favorite. What do you reckon of the chances? Like, obviously, actually, no, that's a really bad way of phrasing it, because the other three definitely have chances because they are the ones who are most likely to challenge Iga. And when we're talking about percentages, it's not by much. But let's talk about the prospects for the other three.
Yeah. For the other three, Sabalenka, like, obviously, if she's really feeling it and playing some of her best tennis, these conditions can be tricky for, honestly, Elena and Arena with the wind at times. Probably puts a lot more pressure on their second serves as well. I don't think they're bad conditions for either, just because they're good enough from the ground and the rest of their game is pretty complete, that I think they are still going to be a big factor. It all just sort of depends on the draw at this point. But Sabalenka and Rybakina, if they play each other again, you know, that's going to be fascinating after the match last year and then also the Brisbane match. Even though Sabalenka has that head-to-head edge, yeah, it is still not a comfortable matchup for her. So
I'm pretty sure Rybakina's won a set in every single match they've played.
They have, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Because Sabalenka was 4-0, but yeah, lost a set in every single match.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's going to be interesting. I think here's a controversial question that I'm sure certain viewers of this channel will absolutely love me asking. Were Elena and Arena fortunate that Iga was injured last year?
I don't know if they were that fortunate, because yes, the rib injury like definitely played a factor, but I also don't think, you know, Iga's confidence was at an all-time high like back then, because she was still, you know, the pressure of being number one, the amazing 2022, the tough loss, the loss in the final, the loss in the United Cup, you know. All this chatter about players trying to figure her out or having figured it out already. And like, yeah, like I think she's probably just more settled into that role nicely after the end to last year and still a pretty good start to the year despite the Australian Open blip. So I think she's probably in a better frame of mind this time going around. And if there's no potential injury, then yeah. But I think, like, yeah, I mean, Sabalenka and Rybakina were basically the players to beat at this point in time last year. Whereas right now, it's like kind of not, they're very close in the race, right? Like all three are fairly close, even though Iga lost in the third round of AO.
Yeah. And Elena lost in round two.
Yeah.
What about Coco?
Yeah, so Coco is the interesting one here because, you know, I would think in like some specific matchups she could be a nightmare, like the one against Sabalenka, she could definitely hold more than her own. The problem is if she comes up against a player who is a really good counterpuncher or someone who is just going to keep relentlessly attacking that forehand, then I have a few more questions. Mm-hmm. This time than maybe I did up until after Wimbledon, up until AO this year, because that loss in Doha, I didn't really see coming to Siniakova. And then, yeah, I don't know if like she got to the quarters here last year, lost to Sabalenka and just was beat pretty bad. But in terms of prior Indian Wells, I'm not sure how many of those results I can really look at and be like, okay, I think this is a good or bad court for her. I think it really just kind of depends on who she places.
Yeah, because she's pretty confident on slow courts, right? So surely the Indian Wells court should be good. Although I appreciate that a lot of her bigger results have been come on the faster hard courts of like the August that we see in August and September.
Yeah, it like sort of gives her more time on the forehand. But then again, the ball like travels pretty quick through the air. And like you got the high bounce as well. So I'd be interested to see. Like, also, she's also been tinkering around with her serve. during the offseason. Like, she worked a little bit with Roddick, trying to make the motion a bit more fluid, because I think there are certainly still some gains to be made there. But yeah, honestly, it's all about the big tournaments and the big matches against her fellow top three, but she has to make sure she gets there first. I mean, against most players, she's going to be the favorite, but there's of course that question if she plays, for instance, if she plays against Svitolina again or something, or another really good counterpuncher, I wonder if she'll be able to hit through that and have the same level of confidence that she did, let's say, in the just before the US Open and US Open last year, where she was just able to block the forehand completely out of her mind.
Svitolina, another name to keep an eye on for if she's healthy. Which is a big if, isn't it? 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've got some interesting ideas. I completely agree with you that there are these question marks for these players, and there's also like reasons why they're favorites, you know. Arena and Elena, obviously last year's finalists, there's no big reason to rule them out other than the wrong opponent on the day for Arena, who can keep getting the ball back, or Elena having some kind of physical issue. You know, although having said that, Arena could have a physical issue, it just doesn't seem to happen to her as often.
I would say maybe Elena is like more of someone who I think like it's going to require a really big level to beat her, because Sabalenka from time to time can just have one really bad day and just be out of the tournament, like she did against Vekic, maybe just, you know, hits herself off the court. Like, that can still happen once or twice a year. It's not as regular anymore, but it does still happen every now and then.
Occasionally, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I've kind of been thinking
she's been peaking at the slams, though, which is really the one that counts. So,
and that's the one everyone cares about, right? By contrast, Iga is queen of the 1000s. I wonder why I enjoyed them more.
Yeah, I mean, for most of the 1000s, like, you have to put her as the favorite, apart from like maybe like the really fast ones, like Dubai or Cincinnati or Madrid.
Canada.
Yeah, Canada's kind of a mixed bag. Like, we'll see. Like Beijing, she should be a favorite again. Like, most of the 1000s she's played, I just expect her to keep racking them up.
I would agree with that. And yes, even Madrid, I would include Madrid in that. It's clay.
It's like clay. Yeah. And if
she lost Sabalenka because of the altitude allowed Sabalenka to play her game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also the tournament that's the least predictive of Roland Garros outcomes.
Yeah,
it's just like,
but we saw that with Rafa, right? Rafa was most vulnerable at Madrid compared to any other clay tournament.
Yes, because you know, the ball would just land a little shorter, or he just would not quite be as effective from the baseline. Yeah, there were all these things that just made it like a big server could just have a really peaking day and just, you know.
Yeah, I have. I'd say for my thoughts on this, I'd say, yeah, I'd agree. So obviously, I have sort of head, heart, and gut predictions. My heart prediction says Iga, as always. Head prediction, Iga, based on the percentages as we talked about. Gut, Coco.
Okay.
And that is based on last couple of years of results for Indian Wells champions. They've had a deep run at Australia, but didn't necessarily win it. Ticks that box. And also would be a fun kind of reverse trend of the Indian, like up until last year, when Indian Wells was in March, the winner went on to win the US Open. It'd be quite a fun sort of flip round, especially since Goff is still undefeated in the US. Hasn't lost a match in the US since Miami. So I appreciate that this takes a lot out of things like head-to-heads and matchups. and it just looks at weird trends. It's weird statistical trends, but that's usually what I base my predictions off, and I'm 50% right.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible for sure. Yeah.
It's a possible scenario. But yeah, that's kind of where if I was kind of say, you know, weird stats maybe point to a Goff title. Why not? But yeah, you can't rule out Eager or the other two by any means. Okay, well, I think that's an Indian Wells preview kind of wrapped up as much as we can before the draw comes out in just over sort of, well, 17 minutes or so.
Yeah. And then we'll see if we'll be eating our words, or we'll just
yeah, if we get Eager with a draw of Noshkova, Ostapenko, Rybakina, that would be unfortunate for her, or Sabalenka meeting Domovekic in round one again or something like that.
Yeah, or we could just get Ostapenko and Azarenka in the same quarter and play them at the same time.
Or better off.
Yeah.
But I did want to do one more kind of fun tangent conversation before we wrap up.
Sure.
The Netflix slam.
Mm-hmm.
If we did a women's Netflix slam, who should play it?
It's a good question. Like, I think I went with like Iga, Arena, some combination of like Osaka, Sabalenka, Swiatek. I don't know who else really like draws that big appeal that casual fans would want to, you know, tune in for and be like. I mean, Serena and Venus, yeah, but like Serena is, you know, not an active player anymore. Venus, yes, I think she would, but I don't know if she'll be like in a competitive enough state to do it right at this point in her career. Like, she's just, you know, on the brink, really, really. She's like 44, so I don't really know. I mean, there's a lot of like great personalities, but I don't know who else I would like pick for like playing exhibitions right now.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's kind of most combinations of the current top four. If you wanted to go with kind of the competitive options, if you wanted to go with maybe the model of the Netflix slam, then Venus versus Coco.
Yes, that's the one that I tweeted about on mine, because I'm like, that's the closest thing I could see of like the passing of the baton, like completely different generations, and like it would just make the most sense to hype up and create a narrative around. But yeah, that would probably be it.
Yeah,
there's a lot of really cool things you could do with it. Like,
I mean, that's the thing. Because we're WTA fans, we know of all these great combinations you could have that would produce a really, really good match. But no one's confident enough in the stuff.
You know what's a more interesting exercise?
I think it's ridiculous, because look how big Osaka is and Coco is, Eager in Europe. You know, sorry, you were saying something.
I think the more interesting conversation for me is like, if we did a women's Labor Cup, who would you be your team Europe and who would be your team world or something?
Well, that's interesting. Obviously, most of the top players are European, like in the men's.
Yeah. But on the women's, it could really be like very even, right? Team world, team, you know, team Europe.
I mean, it'd be very US heavy, I think, team world. You'd have had Admire in there, Fernandez, if she's fit. Who else is there? Like,
there's not that many like non-European.
Non-Europe or American, because obviously you've got plenty of US players. Like Goff and Pegula would be automatic. Keys, if she's fit, would be in there.
Yeah.
Actually, you've pretty much got in there, because you've had Admire and Fernandez in there. You just need one more.
Pretty much, yeah. We just usually just go with the top four Americans. Who is number four American right now? Like
Navarro, I think.
Navarro is number four, yeah.
That would be an interesting extra name. But then, yeah, the European team would be, look, if you want the strongest possible team. Oh, no, wait. Kazakhstan, you'd be Team World, wouldn't you? Isn't Kazakhstan's not Europe? Geographically.
It's like Eurasia, right? Like some parts of Russia.
They haven't had Bublik in the Laver Cup, have they?
No. They had Medvedev, and he was playing for Team Europe, of course.
Bring it on. I'll do it. Although I'd be scared of what coaching advice Vance gives, because he'd come out with a whole load of stats that he just give his players. Like, so if you keep going to the backhand 90% of the time, it breaks down.
That would be kind of fun. They just get a scouting report and everyone have your iPad out there, you know, get access to all the data that the coaches have access to.
Joanna needs to be your scout, though, because, of course, we forgot Osaka for Team World.
Yeah, of course. Osaka, healthy Andreescu.
Yeah. I think Rybakina would have to be Team World.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, is Kazakhstan a part of Asia?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Kazakhstan's in Asia.
Yeah, so then I guess so. That would even it out, actually, quite a bit.
That would even out. Then you've got two top four. So you've got Egan Arena on the same team against Elena and Coco on the same team. Having Egan and Arena as teammates would be quite interesting. I'd love to see that dynamic.
I would, yeah. I'm pretty sure you'd get a lot of good social media content out of it.
You really would. I mean, Arena Sabalenka generates really good social media content anyway.
Yeah, I mean, just have her with her teeth out there smiling and you're done, you know?
And on that note, I think that's the perfect way to brighten everyone's day. I just want to say I'm not... I think Arena and Iga do actually get on.
I think so. Like, you know, we saw it like the WTA finals. I think they were like in, you know, pretty good spirits together. And like,
I actually struggle to believe that Arena doesn't like anyone.
I mean, she's just such a bubbly personality. Like, I can't really imagine she would be like unpleasant to be around, you know? Like her team is all just such good vibes. And, you know, she's just so like, yeah, giggly and laughing all the time and just in a good mood. So,
yeah. Well, I'm always in a good mood talking to you, Vance. So thanks for coming on. Much appreciated. Yeah, always fun. Well, I guess we're going to be, I don't think they're live streaming the draw. So we'll just have to be refreshing Twitter for the next 15, 20 minutes till we find out what it is. And then we'll all be reacting to it around the same time. So that's what we're going to be doing with our time. I suspect a lot of you will be doing the same thing, but thank you everyone for watching. Keep an eye out for our content because we will be bringing you lots of coverage of Indian Wells, not just live commentaries, but also behind the scenes, press conferences, interviews, views from the ground. Check out the YouTube channel, keep an eye on that. Follow us on social media, Instagram, X, Facebook, if you use Facebook. I think we do have one or two viewers on Facebook, actually. Not right now, but we have in the past. Hey, subscribe to our Twitch channel. We don't have many Twitch subscribers. Give us a follow for all the content coming your way. And, of course, for more episodes of ATP Weekly and WTA Weekly, which will be back probably after Indian Wells. I haven't checked with producer on when we're doing the next one, but I think we'll be doing one after Indian Wells. There we go. So we won't be doing it for a couple of weeks, but we'll be wrapping up everything to do with Indian Wells on the WTA side. But I'll probably catch you on some live streams in between. Who knows?
Yeah.
But until then, everyone, enjoy the draw and keep talking tennis.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this video, make sure you hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and click that notification bell so you don't miss out on all things tennis.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.